space, time, and matter.
The mysterious forces of nature.
What is gravity?
The symbols representing all the elements around us.
Bright minds known as theoretical physicists.
Everything falls to Earth with the same acceleration.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Waterloo Collegiate Institute. So tonight's Perimeter Institute public lecture is called What's the Big Idea? My name is John Matlock, a director with the Institute and your host for this evening. Now many of you who are familiar with the lecture series know that we like to mix things up now and then. We typically have a mix of interesting topics throughout the season and different points of view throughout the year. Tonight is no exception. Following a series of lectures that were dealing with some rather weighty topics, including quantum cryptography, time and motion, the future of fundamental physics, we have a completely different change of pace for you tonight with an observer of research who has a very novel point of view and brings a dry sense of wit to the stage. He is Mark Abrams, an author, columnist, and commentator. Mark obtained his degree in applied mathematics from Harvard College, spent several years developing optical character recognition computer systems at Kurzweil Computer Products, and he founded Wisdom Simulations, a creator of educational software. He has written on matters concerning science, medicine, and technology in many publications, including the Harvard Business Review, the technology magazine Embedded System Design, and the engineering magazine Design News. He was also the back page humorist for the late computer magazine Byte. Mark, though, is perhaps best known as a columnist for The Guardian, editor of the Annals of Improbable Research, and father of the annual Ig Nobel Prize ceremony at Harvard. Now, this is a satirical event that, as you will see, bestows some rather tongue-in-cheek honors throughout a wide range of research. Despite the lampooning, Mark is actually on a very serious mission to have you celebrate those inventors and researchers who often toil in obscurity, travel a very lonely path, and who sometimes find themselves on the fringes, because one never quite knows how or where a great concept may materialize. Here to explain, using humor and history, is tonight's guest speaker, Mark Abrams.
I am going to show you lots of things, if I can get the computer to stop seizing up, and talk about them as they're happening, rather than, I hope, talk to you a lot and then show you very few things. I'm going to be starting this over again. I won't explain why people are laughing here. Either you've been in this situation or you haven't. If you heard the person next to you laughing and you weren't, just ask them why they were laughing. I'm going to talk to you about improbable research, things that are improbable, and the Ig Nobel Prizes, which are also, in a sense, improbable. Now, let's see if this works. No, this isn't working either. There we go. Going to be one of those nights with the machine. All right. This is what all of this is going to be about. It's about things that first make people laugh and then make them think. The Ig Nobel Prizes we give out every year. They're for this, for things that first make people laugh and then make them think. What people think, that's up to them. We have been giving out Ig Nobel Prizes since 1991. We give 10 of these prizes a year. The people who get these prizes exist. They are real people. They have done the things I'm going to describe to you. We go to a lot of trouble to check up on that and provide lots of information so you can go look it up and find more detail if you want to find it. If you win an Ig Nobel Prize, this is what you win. This is an Ig Nobel Prize. This is an Ig Nobel Prize winner holding it. It's not easy to win an Ig Nobel Prize, just on the numbers alone. Every year we get well more than 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 new nominations. And we have to choose from among them. But it's worse than that, because whatever doesn't get chosen one year stays in the pool. Now, after 16 years, just on numbers, it's tough to win one of these prizes. You should also know that in most cases, when somebody is selected to win an Ig Nobel Prize, we very quietly get in touch with them and give them the opportunity to quietly decline the honor. But very few people ever turn down this honor. Now, if you're chosen, if you accept, you do win an Ig Nobel Prize. Now, the prizes are different every year. They're handmade. It's a different design every year. What's common every year is they're made from extremely cheap materials. You get two other things. You also get a piece of paper. This piece of paper says you've won an Ig Nobel Prize. And this piece of paper is signed by several people who have Nobel Prizes. So it's a nice piece of paper to have. And the third thing you get is an invitation to come to the Ig Nobel Prize ceremony, which is held in this building at Harvard University down in Massachusetts. It's the biggest and oldest and most imposing meeting place at Harvard. It fits 1,200 people. On Ig Nobel night, it's always jammed utterly to the rafters. We also televise this live around the world on the web. Reporters come from around the world. And if you walk in there as a winner, typically you've traveled from a great distance. The winners often come from literally halfway around the world. They come at their own expense. And then up on the stage, waiting to physically hand the Ig Nobel Prizes to them, are a bunch of Nobel Prize winners. These are the seven Nobel Prize winners who were up on our stage at the most recent Ig Nobel ceremony, handing out the prizes. The heart of the ceremony comes when we announce each winner. Keep in mind, it's a strictly kept secret until the moment we announce them on stage. Each time we announce a winner, the winner gets up, a Nobel Prize winner gets up, they come to center stage, they look each other in the eye, neither one can quite believe it. Now, because it's a ceremony, we always had to deal with the same problem that every ceremony in the world has to deal with. There are a lot of people who are expected to each give a speech. We ask them to keep their speeches really brief. But as I'm sure every one of you knows from unhappy experience, people don't keep things brief, at least as much as you hope they will. And we suffered from that for a few years until we solved the problem. This is how we solve the problem. We call it Miss Sweetie Poo. This is Miss Sweetie Poo. She's a very cute 8-year-old girl. Miss Sweetie Poo sits up on the stage during the whole ceremony. I introduce her at the start, and I explain that whenever Miss Sweetie Poo feels that somebody has talked long enough, she'll let them know. And I ask her to demonstrate. So she walks all the way across the stage, up to the person who's at the microphone. She looks up at that person, and she says, "Please stop. I'm bored. Please stop. I'm bored. Please stop. I'm bored. Please stop. I'm bored." And she doesn't stop until they do. And it works. One problem with having Miss Sweetie Poo, who's 8 years old, is that it's hard to keep a Miss Sweetie Poo who stays 8 years old for much more than a year. So we're always on the lookout for and training new Miss Sweetie Poos. This is a picture of the most recent one. And she was 7 3/4 on the night of the ceremony, so we're hopeful we can get one more year out of her. And just to give you an idea of what it's like, this was the very first Miss Sweetie Poo helping one of the winners finish his speech on time. We tell the winners, you've got about 1 minute. Keep in mind, again, that they've traveled this great distance to talk for 1 minute. And it does tend to make the speeches quite good when they're brief. This is Charles Paxton. He and three colleagues shared the Ig Nobel Biology Prize a few years ago. They're all British. They won for publishing a study that they called Courtship Behavior of Ostriches Towards Humans Under Farming Conditions in Britain. This was the next year. This is Miss Sweetie Poo helping Mr. Hyuk Ho Kwon finish up his speech. Mr. Kwon came from Seoul, South Korea. He won an Ig Nobel Prize because Mr. Kwon invented the self-perfuming business suit. And if you're not familiar with it, you might want to just go look it up. You can go look on our website at improbable.com. We've got links to all these things, or look in the books, or just look him up on the web, or go into a clothing store and ask for a self-perfuming business suit. All right, here, very quickly, are the most recent winners, the 10 winners we announced at the ceremony this past October. First, the winner in the field of ornithology. First time we've ever given a prize in this field. Ornithology, as you know, is the study of birds. And this prize went to Ivan Schwab and the late Philip May, both from universities in California. They won for exploring and explaining why woodpeckers don't get headaches. This is one of their published papers, the beginning of it, Woodpeckers and Head Injury. And here is Dr. Ivan Schwab at the Ig Nobel ceremony accepting his prize. That's a woodpecker. Some woodpeckers, we are told, peck at a rate of about 30 times a second for hours on end. And as far as anybody knows, they don't get headaches. You can read the paper to find out why. This is from the paper, and I'll just give you a hint at it, which is that these are drawings of the insides of the heads of woodpeckers. And woodpeckers' heads are built very differently from the heads of at least most human beings. This also is from the report. Back in the days when they were building a lot of suits of armor, metal suits of armor, some of them had headpieces modeled after woodpeckers. The Ig Nobel Nutrition Prize was awarded to Wasmia Al-Houti of Kuwait University and Fatin Al-Musallam of the Kuwait Environment Public Authority. They won for showing that dung beetles are finicky eaters. This is their published paper. And here is Fatin Al-Musallam, who traveled from Kuwait to Harvard to deliver her speech at the Ig Nobel ceremony. This is from their paper. This is the experiment. They offered dung from three types of animals to these dung beetles and discovered that the beetles indeed were very, very choosy about what they would eat. Here is some of their data. You can see that the food sources offered to them came from horses, from sheep, from camels, fox, and dogs. And this is a dung beetle. The Ig Nobel Peace Prize, which some people consider the most prestigious of the Ig Nobel Prizes, was awarded to Howard Stapleton of Merthyr Tydfil, Wales, for inventing an electromechanical teenager repellent. It's a little machine that makes annoying high-pitched noise that's probably audible to teenagers, but probably not audible to people older than teenagers. He won for a double accomplishment. That was the first part. The second was, after this was on the market, he also began using that same technology to sell telephone ringtones to teenagers. So that now, thanks to Mr. Stapleton, teenagers can get telephone calls, have their phone ring in class. The teacher can't hear it, but all the other students can. So we think of him as being a little like the classical arms merchants who would sell armaments to both sides in a war. This is the device he sells to stores. He sells it mostly to stores and shopping malls. He calls it the Mosquito. And they at first were on sale just in England. And now in North America, they are just starting to go on sale from some distributors. So you're now aware of what's ahead of you. Here he is again. This picture was taken 2 months ago, less than 2 months ago in England. Every March, I go over to the UK and get a bunch of Ig Nobel winners together, and we do a bunch of live shows, sort of like this, but with many Ig Nobel winners all around the UK. They have a National Science Week. So this was taken in Wales, just a few miles from where he lives. And this is a photo from his company, a promotional photo. The Ig Nobel Acoustics Prize, I believe it's the first time we've given a prize in that field, went to three researchers, Lynn Halpern, Randolph Blake, and James Hillenbrand, for an experiment they conducted to learn why people dislike the sound of fingernails scraping on a blackboard. This is the paper they published. It has the title, the evocative title, Psychoacoustics of a Chilling Sound. And here are two of the three scientists at the Ig Nobel ceremony collecting their prize. And as we sometimes do on these occasions, after they gave their 1-minute speech. We had a demonstration. Now, when they did their experiment, since they wanted to reproduce the same sound over and over, they quickly realized it's hard to, when you're using fingernails, to make exactly the same sound. So they found something that's almost as good, but a lot more consistent. You know those little three-prong metal garden scrapers? That's what they used, that and some slate. So since we had 7 Nobel Prize winners on the stage, we got 7 of those scrapers and 7 little pieces of slate. We gave all 7 of them big protective headphones, and then we asked them to demonstrate. And the rest of us, who hadn't really thought this through, the rest of us, the 1,200 of us, didn't have headphones, and the demonstration was quite memorable. And they enjoyed it, at least. The Ig Nobel Mathematics Prize was awarded to Nick Svensson and Piers Barnes of Australia for calculating how many photographs you ought to take when you're taking group pictures so that nobody's eyes will be closed. Here is some of their data. And here are the researchers. The Ig Nobel Literature Prize is awarded to Daniel Oppenheimer, professor at Princeton University. He won for a study he published called Consequences of Erudite Vernacular, Utilized Irrespective of Necessity, Problems with Using Long Words Needlessly. This is the beginning of his very long report on the subject. And here is Professor Oppenheimer accepting his Ig Nobel Prize. He gave a 1-sentence acceptance speech. The Ig Nobel Medicine Prize this year was awarded to Dr. Francis Fesmeyer of the University of Tennessee College of Medicine for his medical case report called Termination of Intractable Hiccups with Digital Rectal Massage. Dr. Fesmeyer shared the prize with 3 doctors from Israel. Because a year after he published his report, these doctors in Israel had a patient who had exactly the same problem. And these doctors had read in a medical journal of how this doctor in America had solved this problem, so they thought they might as well try it themselves. They did, it was a success, and so they published their own paper, which they titled, in homage to him, Termination of Intractable Hiccups with Digital Rectal Massage. Here is the first paper, and here is the second. You may remember about 2 months ago in the news, for quite a long time, there were reports of an unfortunate teenage girl in Florida who had what the press called intractable hiccups. And pretty much every report that I saw anyway said her doctors are baffled. And apparently, that means one of 2 things. Apparently, it means either her doctors don't read medical journals and don't look up online the places that doctors can look these things up online, or that they knew quite well that there was a way to solve this but felt it was not an appropriate treatment for a teenage girl. In any event, there is Dr. Fesmeyer at the Ig Nobel ceremony, and there is Miss Sweetie Poo helping him finish his speech. The Ig Nobel Physics Prize was awarded to Basile Odaly and Sebastian Newkirk, who are both at the University Pierre and Marie Curie in Paris. They won for their insights into why, when you bend a piece of dry spaghetti, it usually breaks into more than 2 pieces. This is the beginning of their report, which is called Fragmentation of Rods by Cascading Cracks, Why Spaghetti Does Not Break in Half. And this is an example of many, many, many things. I know there are a number of physicists in the audience. You know this quite well, but it's sometimes a surprise to people who are not professional physicists that most of the things around you, most of the things that happen all day long, physicists can't really explain very well. Although you can describe it simply, like what happens to a piece of of spaghetti. To really understand the physics of it sometimes is not so simple. And this is a problem people have been working on for decades and decades. Here are the winners at Harvard getting their prize. The man handing it to them is Roy Glauber, who won the Nobel Physics Prize 2 years ago. And this is from the report. As you can see, it starts to get pretty complex when you begin to delve into this. This also is from the report. To my knowledge, this is the only part of a physics paper that's been published ever that has the word barilla in it a number of times. The Ig Nobel Chemistry Prize was awarded to a team of four scientists in Spain who published a study called Ultrasonic Velocity in Cheddar Cheese as Affected by Temperature. This is the beginning of their report. And here is some of their data. And they were looking exactly at what they said they were looking at, how sound waves travel, ultrasonic sound waves, travel through cheese as you heat the cheese or cool the cheese. Here are the four scientists, and that's a piece of cheese. I apologize. It's not a piece of cheddar cheese. We do have good reason to believe that that type of cheese behaves in much the same way. But no one's done the work yet, so if anyone here wants to try it, write it up. We'd love to hear about it. And finally, the Ig Nobel Biology Prize was awarded to Bart Knowles and Ruurd de Jong, both of them based originally in the Netherlands. They have affiliations with universities and other institutions around the world. They won for a series of experiments they did over 20 or so years, in which they showed that the female malaria mosquito, Anopheles gambiae, is strongly attracted to two things. Strongly attracted to the smell of Limburger cheese and to the smell of human feet. I'll read you the titles of several of their reports. They had many. This is Limburger cheese as an attractant for the malaria mosquito. This is of bites and body odor. This one's on human odor, malaria mosquitoes, and Limburger cheese. You might want to read up on the details of exactly how they conducted these experiments. And here is Bart Knowles at the Ig Nobel ceremony giving his speech. He brought some Limburger cheese with him. Turns out he is a native of Limburg in the Netherlands. He passed it out to the people on stage. Something that might interest you to know, or might not, is that last year, a while after they concluded that phase of their experimentation, but they're now doing later things directly descended from it, they got some new funding, about $8 million, from the Bill Gates Foundation. So this is all part of the fight to try to do something to stop malaria. And at the end of the Ig Nobel ceremony, we ask all of the new winners and all of the distinguished scientists and other people on stage. We sometimes have deposed ex-presidents of countries and all sorts of people up there. We ask them all to gather at center stage for a pointless photo opportunity. So that's what you're seeing here. Now, the ceremony itself has many other things. Since we have all of these people there in one place for this one time ever, we take advantage of that. We jam all kinds of stuff in. We make sure the ceremony moves very, very, very fast, and really fast. In 90 minutes, we jam in what, if done at normal speed, would probably take about 6 hours. So here are just a few of the other things that happen. Every year, we have a win a date with a Nobel laureate contest. Each of the 1,200 people who buys a ticket and comes to the event has a chance to win a date. And what you're seeing here is the prize last year. This is, again, Roy Glauber, Nobel Physics Laureate. He was the date. And you see him just moments before the winner was chosen. This is one of our attendants up there trying to help Professor Glauber stay calm. And the way it usually works is that we tell everybody to pick up the nice printed program that they're handed as they walked in to the auditorium and turn to page 12 or whatever. And on page 12 or whatever, there's a picture. And one of the programs, but just one of them, has a picture that's different than the rest. So we say, if yours has a picture of whatever it is, come on up. You've won a date. Well, that's the way it's supposed to work. But this year, we had apparently some kind of printing error. So when we announced it, somebody came up But several somebodies came up. And then several more people came up. And then they just kept coming. We also, every year, write a little opera, a mini opera, about something in science. We take music, usually from classical operas, write whole new words about something in science, and we get professional opera singers up there to perform it. And the scientists who are on stage often join in as well. I'm not going to explain what exactly these were, but you can see video of several of the operas and several of the ceremonies up on the web. And I hope that some of you will come to the ceremonies. I'll just quickly bring you through a couple of past winners. Remember, we've done this for 16 years now. There are a lot of winners. Chances are you know one, maybe even have one in the family. This won the physics prize a few years ago. This was done by a team of several scientists in Australia. And as you can see, the title of their report is An Analysis of the Forces Required to Drag Sheep Over Various Surfaces. The Ig Nobel Literature Prize, one year, we awarded to the British Standards Institution. British Standards Institution publishes standards for how to build pretty much anything you can imagine. Building components, cars, connectors, substances. And they won the Ig Nobel Literature Prize because the British Standards Institution publishes a 6-page specification for the proper way to make a cup of tea. You're looking at the cover sheet for that. And you can't just go to the internet and read this. You have to buy a copy of this. It costs about £30. The Biology Prize a few years ago went to a team based in Europe, published this paper, Pressures Produced When Penguins Poo, Calculations on Avian Defecation. This is what they were analyzing. Many of you know from experience at zoos or perhaps elsewhere that many penguins do this. And these scientists realized there must be an enormous amount of pressure inside a penguin to make this happen consistently. And so they calculated how much pressure must be building up inside a penguin. The man in black here is named Daisuke Inoue. Mr. Inoue won an Ig Nobel Prize. Mr. Inoue is the inventor of karaoke. He won the Ig Nobel Peace Prize. The reason it was the Peace Prize was that by inventing karaoke, he invented an entirely new way for people to learn to tolerate each other. And it was rather extraordinary when he came. If we have a few minutes at the very end, I'm going to show you a few more things and then take a few questions. And if we have about 3 or 4 minutes at the end, I have videotape of him giving his acceptance speech. And so if you want to see that, I'd be happy to show it to you in a bit. This is from a patent that won patent holder's an Ig Nobel Prize. This was a patent granted in 1965 to a married couple named George and Charlotte Blonsky. They lived in New York City, and they called their invention a device to assist women in giving birth. This device consists of a large round table and some machinery. And when the woman is about ready to deliver her child, she lies on her back on the table. She's strapped down to the table, and then the table is rotated at high speed. In the year 2000, we awarded an Ig Nobel Prize in psychology to the two scientists at Cornell who published this paper. This paper is called Unskilled and Unaware of It: How Difficulties in Recognizing One's Own Incompetence Lead to Inflated Self-Assessment. That's sort of complicated. I'll read it to you again. Again, the title is Unskilled and Unaware of It: How Difficulties in recognizing one's own incompetence lead to inflated self-assessments? The next year, 2001, we awarded an Ig Nobel Prize to a man named John Keogh, who lives in Australia, and to the Australian Patent Office. They shared the prize because in that year, 2001, the Patent Office granted Mr. Keogh a patent for the wheel. That's what you see here. And finally, about 4 years ago, gave an Ig Nobel Prize to a Dutch scientist named Kees Mulliker, who saw something unusual and did what good scientists do. He took notes and pictures, and he wrote a report and published it. And this became the first scientifically documented case of homosexual necrophilia in the mallard duck. And this is Kees Mulliker. He works at the Nature Museum in Rotterdam. He's become quite famous in many parts of the world, and the duck is on display should you ever make it to Rotterdam. Now, I've come partly to let you know, and indeed to make a plea to you, that if you know somebody who deserves an Ig Nobel Prize, let us know. And again, there's just the one criterion. They've done something that first makes people laugh and then makes them think. Doesn't have to be in science. It can be in absolutely anything. Absolutely anything at all, they can be absolutely anywhere. Every year of all the nominations we get, somewhere between 10 and 20% are people nominating themselves. So far, very few of those have won. Something that's happened the past 4 or 5 years that we really didn't expect is that we're also now getting a lot of institutions nominating their people. A lot of companies, a lot of schools, universities, laboratories, and in the last couple of years, a lot of governments nominating their own people. We don't fully understand it, but we're not unhappy about that. And the next ceremony will happen in October. It's almost always the first a Thursday night in October. It's on October 4th. You're all invited. If you can't make it down to Harvard, we televise it live on the internet, and then we put up the video of that afterwards. Now, this is most of what I brought to show you, but there are a couple more things. So I'm going to show you in a couple minutes a few other examples of improbable research, and I think you've kind of got the flavor and the idea that at first glance, it's often very difficult to make a good decision about whether something is important or not, or valuable or not, or good or bad. Sometimes it's clear, but often it's not. And that's, you know, sort of the theme underlying a lot of this stuff. So I'll show you a little bit more about that. And before I do, we have what I expect will be a real little treat. It's something that we've done at the Ig Nobel ceremony, and we're going to be able to do here. It's a debate. This is the Great Inertia Debates. We have four debaters. If I could ask our four debaters to please come up on stage. And I'll explain to you while they're coming how this is going to work. There will be two debates. Each debate will be on some aspect, some question involving inertia. Okay. Now, we could have, let's see, perhaps the two of you could come over here and you'll be up first. Yes, the two of you. And then you'll be in the second debate. What's a good spot? Right here, did you?
Yeah, here's good.
Okay, sorry to make you walk back and forth. So right here, if we could. Each debate will be about 15 seconds long. I'm going to start each debate by saying on your mark, get set, go. The first debate, you'll both be speaking into the same microphone. The first debate will be fast versus slow. On your marks, get set, go.
Fast, fast,
slow,
fast.
Slow,
fast,
slow,
fast, 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 fast,
slow, slow,
fast.
Slow, slow,
fast, 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 fast.
Time. Could you please help us decide who won this debate. And we'll decide on the basis of your applause. If you believe that the winner was fast, could you please applaud? If you believe the winner was, pardon the expression, slow, applaud. I believe the winner is slow.
Thank you both.
That's a separate question.
Oh, well done. Okay. Well done.
Well done. If you could move aside and please stay up here. And the next debate will be between be a debate of yes versus no. On your marks, get set, go.
Yes. 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 Yes.
No, 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 no.
Yes. Yes.
Time. Please help us decide who won this debate between yes and no. If you believe the winner of this debate was yes, please applaud. If you believe the winner of this debate was no, please applaud. I'm afraid the winner is no.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And now we have to have a runoff.
Uh-oh.
The winners of the two debates. This is the finals, the grand finals of the Great Inertia Debate. Uh-oh. It's a final between the final pits, slow versus no. 15 seconds, on your marks, get set, go. Time! Please help us settle once and for all the question of slow versus no. If you believe the winner was, again, sorry, slow, please applaud. If you believe the winner was no, please applaud. Ladies and gentlemen, our winner. Applause for all our debaters. Thank you very much. We use the Ig Nobel ceremony as a testing ground for these things. I don't know why, but we do. All right, and very quickly, here are a few more things. These are some examples of improbable research that we publish in the magazine. I wear many hats. One of them is I'm editor of this magazine called The Annals of Improbable Research. It comes out 6 times a year. And most of the magazine, the heart of it, is just little summaries, or actually usually little quotes, from some of the research published around the world. And there's a lot. There's research on more topics than you probably dream exist. Just in the science world, we don't limit ourselves just to science, but science is the heart of it. Just in the science world, scientists who communicate their discoveries to each other in writing usually, do it historically by publishing in journals, in magazines. And there's a lot of work that goes into this. It's a big deal to publish in some of them. Others, not quite such a big deal, but there's a lot of work. This is the heart, in many ways, of how science operates. In the science world, there are now more than 20,000 of these journals being published every year. There's nobody who looks at all 20,000. There's nobody who's even heard the names of all 20,000. There are also journals in every other field of study you can imagine. People find the best or the worst of this stuff, both, I hope, and send it to us, and we pick out the most interesting, and that's what's in the magazine. We also publish a little bit of original research that people submit to us. This is just quick examples of some of the stuff. These are studies that exist that we have copies of. One of them is a study in a journal called Evolutionary Ecology, and it's by three authors called Vincent, Van, and Gough. Another is a journal that published an article called Another Case of Water Beetles Landing on a Red Car Roof. Okay? And, of course, a very popular thing in the Journal of Differential Equations titled Some Models for the Propagation of Bores. If you have access to a library, and one way or another, I'm sure all of you do, you might go in and ask the librarian for a copy of one of these things sometime. Some other reports, there was one recently called Mental Decrepitude on the U.S. Supreme Court. Timing of egg loss in macaroni penguins, and one called Awakening Effects of Simulated Sonic Booms on Men and Women. Okay. Now, of the things that we've published, original research, sometimes they get quite a bit of attention. About 5 years ago, I think, we published this report done by three scientists, one in Texas, two in Arizona, I believe, and they call their report Kansas is Flatter Than a Pancake. This is Kansas. This is a pancake. And this is evidence that Kansas is much flatter than a pancake. We also published this report, Apples and Oranges, a Spectrographic Comparison. You may know or you may vaguely remember that you can take any kind of substance, and if you can burn it, if you look at the light through a prism, it separates it out into colors, and you can tell from those colors what was in that substance. You can analyze that substance. So that's what this scientist did. He took a little piece of apple and burned it, and took a little piece of an orange and burned that, and he compared the light from both of them and discovered when you do a proper scientific comparison of apples and oranges, they're virtually identical. We also published this rather perplexing report, Feline Reactions to Bearded Men. And people sometimes send us in photographs of things that they've seen in microscopes, in telescopes, or out in the field. And once in a while, they're rather spectacular. We love to publish these. This is one we put on the cover. This the scientist who took this told us this was a photomicrograph, this is enlarged, I forget, 50,000 times, something like that, of what he thinks are the fossilized remains of some kind of microbe that's long extinct. And he says the thing that looked like eyes aren't eyes. Those are probably holes where the antennae came through. But it's beautiful, isn't it? If you know anyone who has pictures of this quality, not that I can describe this quality, but if you have some, we'd love to see them. And we publish on all kinds of things. This was a report about what's called the last mile problem in telecommunications. I'll go into it just a bit in case you haven't heard of it. Around the world now, it's relatively easy and inexpensive to send telephone signals, video, internet signals, long, long distances. The problem comes in what's called the last mile. How do you hook up those long cables to your house or your school, whatever? That's where all the expense is and all the problems are. These scientists worked out the calculations on how much data goes over various ways and how much it costs, and they discovered that right now, at this point in history, in most cases, it's cheaper and more efficient. You'll send more data faster if you put it on a CD and have a snail haul it than if you send it over conventional wires. We also had a special painting issue. Every issue is a special issue, special anatomy issue. This was done by an anatomy professor at the University of Munich who spent years studying statues and paintings of centaurs around the world and used that and his knowledge of anatomy to do a beautiful treatise on the anatomy of the centaur. And every year, one of our issues is a special issue about that year's Ig Nobel winners. And you've seen this gentleman before, Dr. Ivan Schwab, he of the woodpecker fame. So I hope you will read it. I hope you will consider writing for us. And I do want to announce, we're just about to have a digital edition become available soon. And the advantages, of course, of going digital are several. But the important one is that digital is useful if hiccups should occur. And it's also really cheap, and we're making this very inexpensive, especially for schools. So $25 for a school means every student and teacher in your school can read it. So we hope some of you will subscribe. But more than that, I hope some of you have done some improbable things, whether you're formally a scientist or not, and you'll write them up and tell the world about it. We've had, in one issue, in the same issue, reports written by, on one page, a seven-year-old student, and on another, somebody who has a Nobel Prize in chemistry. And those were both equally good reports. And I mean that as a high compliment to both of those authors. So anyway, that's what I've brought to show you. We'll take some questions, and again, if we have a few minutes left at the end, and if you want, I can show you the acceptance speech by the Ig Nobel winner, the man who invented karaoke. Now, what are your questions?
What is the piece of the article that you found to be both the most absurd, but ended up having the most practical sort of application?
Okay, what's an article that I found most absurd that turned out to be most practical? Two of them that I showed you here, or alluded to, because the same two things happen in both cases, which is odd. I hadn't quite realized that until this moment. One was, in both cases, the scientists, I'll tell you what the two are. One is that analysis of the forces required to drag sheep over various surfaces. That was done in Australia. The other is the prize that went to the team in England that did courtship behavior of ostriches toward humans under farming conditions in Britain. In both cases, when I telephoned them to quietly inform them that they'd won a prize, that was the first moment, they told me, that phone call was the first time any of them realized that what they've done is funny. But more to the point, in both cases also, it was not the scientists who came up with the idea of doing that research. In each case, there was a local industry that had a big problem they were trying to solve, and they called in the best scientists they could find to solve it. And in both cases, the scientists did help out the industry at least understand a lot better what the nature of their problem was. There have been quite a few other things, too. We're always pleased to get back in touch with the winners years later or try to keep tabs on them, those of them who aren't in prison anyway. And those are mostly winners of the economics prize. And because often what happens afterward, what they do afterward, turns out to be a better story than the thing that got them their prize. So you never know. Say two more questions. Yeah.
Have any Ig Nobel Prize winners ever gone on to win a Nobel Prize in their career or vice versa?
Has anyone won both a Nobel and an Ig Nobel Prize is the question. I think probably the most accurate answer is not yet. But there have been all kinds of curious interplay between the two. One of the sweetest things that happened is one of the people who has been part of the ceremony for, well, now 12 years, but had been, at the time this occurrence happened that I'm going to describe, had been part of the ceremony for 10 years. Something I didn't mention is there's a tradition at the Ig ceremony where a lot of people bring paper and throw paper airplanes. So we have 1,200 people throwing paper airplanes for an hour and a half, which causes a problem. They mount up on the stage, and we found pretty quickly you need at least two people up there with brooms or else we can't walk around. So we had two people up there with brooms. One of them is a Harvard physics professor. So he was, 2 years ago, he, I believe, had just turned 80 years old. And I think it was 2 days before the Ig Nobel ceremony, he got a phone call at home about 5:30 in the morning from Stockholm, Sweden, telling him he just won a Nobel Prize in physics. And that was Roy Glauber, who you saw up here, who also won all those, or was the prize this past year in the Win a Date contest. But Roy has not won an Ig Nobel Prize, at least not yet. So, and one last question. Yes?
I have an answer, and then I have a question.
You have an answer and a question.
Yeah.
Why do you need me?
I was just thinking that I have an answer at the previous questions about why. And my answer is that my feeling is that your endeavor is answering to the question, why not? And then the question that I have is, can you elaborate about what do you mean by thinking? You said that you should first laugh and then think. So what do you mean by thinking? And I'm going further saying, relating to the previous question, if any of these crazy ideas sometimes have hidden some gems, you know, some valuable ideas.
I'm lost. Was that your question or your answer?
The last one was the question.
Now I'm thoroughly lost. Maybe we can continue this in writing sometime.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
Do we have a couple minutes left? All right. If you object, it's fine, but I would love to show you this. It's about 3 minutes long, this video of the inventor of karaoke giving his acceptance speech. The video is a little grainy. I apologize for that, but I think you can make it out okay. Might want to turn this lights down. And the sound up.
The Ig Nobel Peace Prize is awarded this year to Daisuke Inoue of Hyogo, Japan, for inventing karaoke, thereby. Let me read to you the complete citation. The complete citation, not yet, whatever you have in mind. The complete citation says the prize is for inventing karaoke, thereby providing an entirely new way for people to learn to tolerate each other. Here is our winner.
Thank you. Made in Japanese English, 少しだけ. Hello, everyone. I am Daisuke Inoue. I am from Japan. I am a last samurai.Mini Chomari. But tonight, Tom Cruise can come. Majime. Actually, I am the inventor of karaoke. Inventor of karaoke.I am very happy to be here and nominated for the Ig Nobel Peace Prize. Once upon a time, I had the dream to teach people to sing. So,I invented the karaoke machine. I don't know it was a start of something of big. Now, more than ever, I want to teach the world to see perfect harmony. You see? Coca-Cola.
Let's party! Thank you! Thank you very much.
And now, here are Karen Hopkin and the Nobel laureates with a special personal tribute to Mr. Inoue.
The boys and I wanted to sing you a little song. Yes, there's music. This one's for you, Mr. Inoue. You're just too good to be true. I can't take my eyes off you. You'd be like heaven to pass.
Thanks for letting me show that to you, and thanks for coming tonight.